tuning into the No Cap Podcast, powered by the DFS Karma Podcast Network. Now here's your host with the most, Jack Caparuccio.
Welcome to the No Cap Podcast, powered by the Karma Media Network. I'm your host, Jack Caparuccio, aka Clinic Cap on Twitter. This is episode number one of the No Cap Podcast. Since this is a brand new show, I'm going to give you a brief rundown of what I'll be covering this season. I'm going to be reviewing redraft, best ball, some player props, sports betting, and dynasty over the course of the year. This show is meant to give you a little bit of everything while not sucking away all of your valuable time. That being said, let's get right into it. My first segment of the day is redraft mailbag. For those who don't know what redraft is or what it means, it's your traditional fantasy league that you might play in at work, might be your home league. You redraft your team every single year, usually 10 teams, sometimes it's half PPR or full PPR. Or if you're a dinosaur, you're still playing standard leagues where your receptions don't count for points. So I asked a simple question on Twitter earlier this week, and that is, what is your biggest lingering question you have going in your redraft leagues this year? I had a ton of good responses in the thread, but there are a couple I want to make sure I highlight on this pod. The first come from @CubDominican on Twitter. He says, at the 112, should I go with a guy like Nick Chubb and Diggs, or possibly Davante Adams and Stephon Diggs? Full PPR, I feel like reaching for Waller there isn't wise. Should I trade down to get Waller and pick up a mid-rounder? Should I just go heavy wide receiver and have that advantage on everyone else? So for me, this is a multi-pronged question. For one, I'm probably not trading down for Darren Waller. I'm probably just going to pick him up right there. If your league doesn't value those elite tight ends that highly in the first, second round, then absolutely you can trade down and get a mid-rounder, but you also have to know your league. There's been a shift lately that people are spending up on those elite tier tight ends. Me personally, I would rather have the top three tight end over the top three wide receiver because the drop-off from the top three at those positions is far less. For example, the positional advantage of tight end every single week is one you can't ignore. The difference between the tight end 3 and the tight end 10 for fantasy is around 100 points, whereas that gap is not nearly as large between the wide receiver 3 and the wide receiver 10. So I'm taking the tight end there every single time, especially in full PPR. Do monitor that Darren Waller hasn't practiced in, I think, 8 or 9 days now in training camp, and nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows where he is. So keep that in mind as you're going forward. If you're drafting right now, maybe slide him down a little bit just because of that uncertainty. We have no idea what the injury could be. My next question comes from my man, Dr. Vig, on Twitter. He asked, with all the injuries and trade potential for major players like Aaron Rodgers at the time and Deshaun Watson, when is the best time to have a redraft league with all my friends? So the Aaron Rodgers situation has obviously resolved itself, and Deshaun Watson, we have no idea if he could be traded or not. All kinds of reports going out there about Philadelphia. But in general, I like to have my redraft leagues draft around the third week in preseason, around that third preseason game. Usually, we unfortunately get most of the injuries out of the way by then. We can kind of see who's starting to, prove their worth on depth charts for those people behind the main starters, and you can start picking out some of those fancy sleepers as you go along the way. So I shoot for week 3 of preseason because I think most of our questions are answered going into it, and it makes it way, way easier to do a redraft league when a bunch of guys aren't getting hurt before the season even starts. This last question for redraft is something I've talked about multiple points this offseason. This question comes from @ed_Franz, who asked, my biggest internal struggle is when to take that tight end. I've won so many titles on the backs of Kelce, but can/should I wait and get a Waller/Hawk/Pitts and bolster another position? So the first part of my answer is addressing the second part of this question. I don't think you can wait and get a Waller or Pitts, honestly. Waller is pretty consistently a second to third round pick now, and Pitts on Underdog Fantasy is going in the third round in some drafts. If a third round pick for a rookie tight end is waiting, I don't know what taking one early is. If I would advocate for taking one of those guys in the first three rounds, besides Hockenson, you can wait on him to the fifth. But I really don't think you can wait anymore on these elite tight ends. I think the market's starting to catch up to this a little bit where they can see that you said it, you won so many titles on the backs of Kelce. There's a reason for that because the advantage he gives you over all the other tight ends is so significant. That you can't beat it. And he's been like that for 5 years straight now. So I'm perfectly comfortable taking a tight end in the first round. I'd target Kelce from the 105 down in the first round. If you really want him, you can reach higher. I mean, he's the most valuable fantasy player that's not named CMC, in my opinion. My next segment's the Dynasty Dish, which is similar to a redraft mailbag, but it's all Dynasty questions. For those who don't know what Dynasty football is, it is that step up from redraft in terms of complexity. Instead of drafting a new team every single year, you have what's called a Dynasty Startup Draft, where you draft, you know, it can be 25 rounds, it can be 30 rounds, however long you want it to be. You draft all these players. You have very deep benches. You have a taxi squad where you can let rookies develop, and multiple other things you can do, and depends on what platform you play on. But you keep that league in perpetuity and all the players on it. You have rookie draft picks, so you can add guys like Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields when they come out, and you know, keep shuffling youth through. You can trade draft picks, you can trade players all year round. It's that next level up for people who want, you know, maybe a little more complexity than your standard redraft league. So I'm not the best Dynasty person in the world. There are definitely people who spend more time on it than I do, and I'll be honest and transparent with that. But I do know enough and play in enough leagues to, you know, properly answer a lot of these questions. This first one comes from at SGH Can't Copy, and he says, what will the future look like for Denzel Mims in New York? The guy is coming off of food poisoning, and they don't seem to like him in that offense. So I'll say, and this happens with a lot of regime changes, you know, the new regime in New York didn't draft Denzel Mims. And we've already seen them invest heavily in the wide receiver position elsewhere with signing Corey Davis in free agency, and drafting Elijah Moore, who I absolutely love this year. So I think that, you know, Mims could carve himself out the role as maybe the wide receiver three in this offense at this point. You know, we have Jameson Crowder there who gets banged up, but he is effective when he's healthy, and he's great for a young quarterback with and Zach Wilson being that slot weapon for him. So there's been reports that Denzel Mims worked with the second team, third team, and he's just now starting to work his way up to the first team offense. And I think it could be a situation where either he struggled to learn the new playbook at first, or maybe New York is trying to position him as some kind of trade bait. They might be working him up in the preseason, let him run with the first team, and then show other teams, like, this guy's a tradable asset, and trade him away. I don't know for sure. I like Denzel Mims. He's got a good player profile. So I think he's the type of guy where you bet on the talent a little bit. Because if he does get traded somewhere else, then maybe a fresh start would be great. And he does have the talent to thrive in the NFL. This next question comes from at ShardBearer88. He asks, will Gabe Davis take over as the wide receiver two tied to Josh Allen? So I'll be completely honest and say I'm not the biggest Gabe Davis truther by any means. I've said earlier this offseason that he reminds me a lot of Darius Slayton and how we were talking about him last year with Daniel Jones, saying, you know, Slayton can be the breakout wide receiver two. All the deep balls came his way, the high yards per catch. And funny enough, him and Gabe Davis's stat lines, when they were getting hyped up like this in the offseason on Fantasy Twitter, are very similar, eerily similar. And I think they profile similarly as well. I think Gabe Davis is more of a one-trick pony than he is a fully developed wide receiver too. Now, if he makes huge strides in his route running and shows that he can be something else besides that deep threat, that every couple drives, he's good for a big splash play, which is great, then we'll see. But, you know, people are quick to write off Emmanuel Sanders, but we have to remember that Emmanuel Sanders can still get open. He's a good route runner. That stuff translates when you get older in the NFL. He was never a guy based off purely athleticism. So I think Emmanuel Sanders is a wide receiver two in that offense, and Gabe Davis is more of that wide receiver three deep shot type of guy. This next question comes from at @DFS_Joey. He says, this is more of a general question. How do I determine the value of a rookie draft pick for trade value? I never really know what a first round draft pick is worth when adding it to a trade. And I hear you on that. You know, people can say, oh, the 2021 picks are worth this much, 2022 is not worth anything, and the 2023 is just gold. Unless you're deep into the weeds and you know, evaluating each prospect in each class, a lot of times it can be really ambiguous. For something like this, I would point you in the direction of a Dynasty trade calculator that's out there, because they do those values for you. If you're the type of person who just plays Dynasty and just wants to, you know, have the information given to you, which is perfectly fine, not all of us are degenerates in 50 leagues, I think that's great, because they'll assign values and what that value is relative to the players in your league, so that when you're trying to offer picks out there and in trade propositions, you can really see what that's worth and if you're offering too much or offering too little. I don't think you should live and die by a trade calculator. I'm always a, you know, proponent of doing your own evaluation, but I understand that not everyone wants to do that, and that's perfectly fine. This next question comes from at @DoomZoneFF. He says, I'm pointing a finger here and I don't care. How do you deal with a league where only half the people make trades? So I'll say this. I think that if you're not in a league that you're having fun with people or you don't get along with the people, it's probably best to find a different league. And that might not be the case with this. You know, with those, the half that does make trades, maybe they're great. But if somebody's just saying they don't want to make a trade just because they don't want to make a trade, it seems kind of silly to me. You know, if I were a commissioner, I would try to encourage trading. You obviously can't make a rule like saying, oh, you have to trade once a year. Like, you can't make people do that. But I would encourage you to try to find other leagues or maybe other league mates that are more like that, are more like-minded and want to trade all the time. Because let me tell you, there's nothing more fun than making some blockbuster trade. Whether it ends up good for you in the end or bad, it's always super fun to do. So I would just try to find one that does like trading, and maybe that'll get your fix of trading, and then you can still deal with the other one that only half the people make trades in, and it'll be better for you. This next question is from at D. Kesey. He says, at what stage, parentheses, game X, do you separate a prospect's NFL production from his college/draft profile? There's more to this tweet, but I think this is really the root of what he's asking. I don't think there's a set number of games for me that I determine this. We'll use the case of N'Keal Harry. You know, he was banged up his first whole year. He didn't have a great quarterback play last year. We saw Cam Newton only throw 8 touchdowns and the whole season, and he struggled to separate from corners in the NFL, and that's not really his game anyways. He's more of a 50-50 ball kind of guy, and I've always thought that. But I don't think there's necessarily a set amount of games that I go, you know, oh, he has 10 games. I'm going to write him off. He's done. I think I look at it as years. Usually for me, I find myself at that year 3 mark. If a prospect doesn't break out, even if they have a good profile, then I'm looking to move on. You have your rare cases like Devontae Parker, where I think it was year 4 or 5, where he finally broke out. But what has he done since then? He hasn't done anything crazy for fantasy since that breakout year where you got him practically for free. And he had, you know, high draft capital and good prospect profile coming out, but sometimes it doesn't happen. So for me, it's year 3, and then I try to move on from a player. My next segment is Best Ball Mania Cheap Stacks. And this is for Underdog Fantasy. If you haven't heard of Underdog Fantasy, you must have been living under a rock. It's the biggest and best ball platform on the planet. And if you use the promo code KARMA, you can get free bonuses by signing up if you do not already have an account already. I've been doing this article series for the last couple weeks on some of the cheapest stacks in best ball. And what I mean by stacks is players on offense from one offense that you draft together. So for example, for this example, I'm using the Indianapolis Colts. I think that, you know, obviously you have your consensus offenses that are really great. You know, you have Kansas City Chiefs. I want Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce. Of course you do. So does everybody else. So that's why they're getting drafted so highly. You do need to make some against the grain non-consensus picks for some of those championship teams that end up winning big money. It's not like everyone who's drafting the same exact team is going to win the money. It's just not going to work out that way. So I've been trying to identify some of these values out there that I think relative to their ADP, they'll outperform what they're expected to do and score more points for you. So on the Colts, I like 3 players to stack together. If you're going to do this, I would recommend doing all 3 drafted together. There's lots of data out there that's showing that stacking is the way you win these championships. In particular, at J Larkey Tweets, I'll give him a shout out here, has done some great articles over Roto Underworld on stacking, and I would highly recommend you check those out. So the first piece of this is quarterback Carson Wentz. As of today, he's still dealing with the injury, but reports are now coming out that he could be ready for week 1. So everyone panicked, and then magically he's going to be fine. You know, the newly acquired franchise quarterback was on MVP level in 2017 season. We all know that. We haven't seen much from him since. But I will say that through the first 7 games of the 2020 season, Wentz was the QB7 overall for fantasy leagues. And that was on a terrible team. The Eagles last year were bad. Their best receiver was arguably Jalen Reagor, and he started the year off when he wasn't healthy. And they had a bad O-line, and they had no viable defense and no viable run game. So, you know, going from the Eagles to the Colts, who have an all-pro offensive line, they have Jonathan Taylor, who could be a top 10 running back by the end of this year, that's an immediate improvement. Obviously, they don't have some alpha dog wide receiver there, but if you're going from nothing to something, that's still an improvement, right? So he's being currently drafted as the QB22 and 163.3 overall on Underdog Fantasy ADP, and I would expect that has dipped a little bit since I've written this up, just because of that injury. But I think it's the type of guy you can target as your QB2. and you'll get some QB1 payoff some weeks because best ball, of course, sets your lineup for you depending on who scores the most points that week. So I think Wentz is the type of guy you want on your roster because he could have some good spike weeks. The next guy I want to talk about is Michael Pittman, the wide receiver. The 2020 rookie struggled to get going because of injuries last season. And I think with a full offseason of health and another year under Frank Reich, Pittman should be much improved in year two. Give him a quarterback in Carson Wentz who likes to target big body receivers. If you didn't know, Pittman is 6'4", similar to Alshon Jeffrey, and Wentz and him had a great chemistry when they were both healthy. And I think this is a match made in fantasy heaven. He's got an ADP of wide receiver 47 and 93.4 overall in underdog fantasy. I'm all over Pittman as a potential breakout wide receiver too, meaning top 24. I really do think that's in his range of outcomes if he hits, because I think Wentz is going to key in on one or two guys and hyper-target them. And I think Pittman's the best of the bunch in Indianapolis. My last guy for the Colts stack is Nyheim Hines. I know that Jonathan Taylor is a quote-unquote sexy name at running back, but I think Hines is a far, far better value. Since underdog fantasy is a half PPR format, Hines will still have a lot of value as a pass-catching running back. While he wasn't consistent last season, he finished as the RB20 overall in half PPR formats. You don't need consistency for a cheap best ball stack because they set your lineup for you based on spike weeks. If you remember, Hines had that huge blow-up week early in the year last year, and everyone went and blew their waiver budget on him or fab or waiver priority to get Hines, and he was quiet after that, 9 points, 10 points. He didn't have a big spike week like that for a while after that. But in best ball, you'll get that spike week. If he scores 40 points in a week, you're going to get that, and he's going to be in your lineup, and that's the type of guy you want because he can single-handedly win you a week if and when he hits. His current ADP is RB44 overall and 142.9 overall ADP. At that value, I think you should be targeting Hines in every draft, especially if you're a Jonathan Taylor manager. God forbid something happens to Jonathan Taylor, but if it did, Nyheim Hines would have more value. Obviously, you have the Marlon Mack factor, but we also don't know what Mack's going to look like coming off that Achilles tear. My next segment is some NFL player props for the year. So over the course of the year, I am going to be going through some sports betting. I think it's important to include that to give you the full experience of what fantasy can bring. And there are some NFL player props I've been identifying for a while that I think could potentially make you some good money this year. All of these prop lines are based on DraftKings Sportsbooks, just so you know. Lines may vary based on the time you're reading this or if you're using a different sports book. So just keep that in mind when I'm talking about this. Let's dive on in. Alvin Kamara regular season rushing yards over 945.5 at plus 100 odds. I'm honestly surprised at this line and these odds. While most of you probably know, Kamara has never rushed for 1,000 yards in a season, this could be easily the first season that he does it. In a 16-game season last year, Kamara rushed for 932 rushing yards. If we add in another game for the new 17-game season to his 2020 per-game rushing pace, Kamara would have finished with 1,056 rushing yards, 100 yards over his current over-under line. And now we have uncertainty at the quarterback position, and now uncertainty with Michael Thomas since he's lost for the early part of the year and all these reports that he's not happy in New Orleans. I think the Saints could lean even more on Kamara in the run game, and we've seen him being a really efficient runner when he gets the ball. Obviously, you have Latavius Murray there taking away some of the carries, but I really think Kamara finishing over 1,000 yards is much more probable than we think it is. So I'm taking over on that line at 945.5. I'm buying that one. My next line that I really like is Chris Carson regular season rushing yards over 1,000.5 at plus 100 odds. So just a hair over 1,000 yards. We all know the Seattle Seahawks have historically been one of the most run-heavy offenses in the league. But for the first 8 games of the 2020 season, they deviated from that trend with one of the most pass-heavy offenses in the NFL. But through the final 8 games of 2020, they shifted back to their run-heavy roots. It's like the scene in Office where Michael goes snip, snap, snip, snap. You know, they flip-flop. Pete Carroll can't make a decision on what kind of offense he wants. Last year, the Seahawks fired their offensive coordinator at the end of the year and hired a new one because Pete Carroll was noted saying they were not run-heavy enough last season. So he wasn't happy with the pass-happy, let Russ cook Seahawks. With Chris Carson being the only notable running back on this roster, I'm smashing the over on this prop. If Carson only sees a 5% increase in his per-game rushing productivity over the course of a 17-game season, he's projected to rush for 1,013 yards. It's one of the better lines I've seen thus far, and you bet one unit on Chris Carson over 1,000.5 rushing yards at plus 100 to win 2 units. A unit meaning how much of your bankroll you use for betting for those who aren't familiarized with betting terms. My last line that I really like is Jamal Williams regular season rushing yards over 525.5, and this is at negative 115 odds. Jamal Williams is the newest Detroit Lions running back. We all know that new offensive coordinator Anthony Lynn commented in the offseason how he sees Williams as an A-back, like former Charger Melvin Gordon, in his offense. And that's just a role he plays. That's not necessarily commenting on the talent between Swift and Williams, but just saying, you know, Williams is the type of guy that fits this role for me. This is what my offense needs, and he fits it. But that role does serve as the early down thumper that racks up yards, as we saw Melvin Gordon do, and they operate in the red zone traditionally. Williams is not only the best, but the only viable rushing option beyond DeAndre Swift. Swift has already dealt with injuries in his young career, so if Swift goes down, Williams will easily hit the over on his prop. And Swift is already dealing with injuries in training camp. He's reported with a sore groin, which is one of those things where if you're not careful, he can pull it worse, it can linger, it can flare up. So I think that I think Williams' value is rising even more since I wrote this, and that the line could have changed a little bit, but I'm still comfortable with him at 600 yards or over on the season. Last year, in a similar role at the line over 16 games, veteran Adrian Peterson, you know, the guy who's like 34 years old, he's like the new Frank Gore, accumulates 604 rushing yards on a terrible Lions team who was trailing almost every game. Last season, in a lesser role with the Packers, Williams had 505 rushing yards. With the extra game in the season, he projects to pass that mark easily, even with a limited role. Bet 1.15 units on Jamal Williams over 525.5 rushing yards at -115 to win one unit. That's it for today's show. If you like the show, make sure to subscribe anywhere podcasts can be found and leave a quick review if you'd be so kind to do so. I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the No Cap Podcast. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review anywhere podcasts can be found. We'll be right back.